The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 410. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. And I also hope that you had a great holiday season. I know I did. I took a couple weeks off from the PVD Cast to spend time with friends and family. Did a little bit of traveling, obviously up to Rhode Island to visit mom and stepdad. And it was great. It was a great, low-key, easygoing, fun. There's so many adjectives I could use. But just, you know, to kind of wrap up this train of thought, I hope everything with you was great during the holidays, that you, your friends, your family, you had a great time being together. And honestly, that's what matters around the holidays. But before I start talking about my guest for this episode, I want to give a quick plug to, of course, my man Gerald Glassford of the Pop Culture Cosmos. He had me on earlier this week to talk about the world of professional wrestling. Like, what did we think were great matches? What did we think were not great matches? Who was our wrestler of the year for both the women and the men? Who was the most overhyped wrestler? We also talk about, of course, predictions for 2024. And we even dive in to a discussion about the Iron Claw, which I have seen that movie. And at this time, I'm not going to give my honest opinion on it because it is January 3rd as I'm recording this intro. And I don't know who has seen it, who hasn't seen it. And I don't want to be a spoiler because definitely I think that if I talk about it and I give my 2 cents worth about the movie, that'll spoil it for some folks. So maybe in a month or two after it's already had its run, maybe then I will go back and revisit the Iron Claw and give you all my opinions on it. So that'll give you something to look forward to in a future episode. But let's talk about this episode. My guest is a gentleman that wears many hats. He is a writer. He is an artist. He is an inker. He's a colorist. He's a hype man. He does the social media for this project. And it's amazing that this individual has any time to like sleep or eat or anything. He's a one-man show. I'm talking about the man behind the comic Slaughter Dolls, Steve Messenger. I originally was kind of tipped off about Steve a few months ago when I spoke to Lee Exifer. And Lee has worked with Steve, and so I finally got around to getting him on the show, and it's a fun, fun episode. We talk about all kinds of things. We try to focus on his projects, and we do, but we also talk about movies and the holidays, and it's just one of those very well-rounded and fun episodes. I think you're going to dig it. So with that, I'm not going to waste much more time. Before I get to my conversation with Steve, I am in debt to a wonderful sponsor. I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. That's right. I don't know. In debt was, that makes it sound like some type of like ancient Middle Ages type of scenario there. But anyways, I can tell you this for certain, that World's Greatest Comics has everything you need for your comic book fandom. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, comic book supplies, toys. They got hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, a great pull system, a friendly staff, a great store. So you need to check it out, especially if you're here in Ohio. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. You can even check them out online. Their website is wgcomics.com. And they have a great Facebook page. Just look for at WG Comics. They're pretty active over on their Facebook page, so you definitely need to check it out. And again, I thank Jeff and all the fine folks down there at the store for being a sponsor of the PVD cast. Again, it means so much to me. I don't have the words to put it into an actual sentence to express my feelings about the store and about everybody down there. So you get a chance, you're in Central Ohio, stop by the store. That enough said. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with the man behind Slaughter Dolls, Steve Messenger. Ladies and gentlemen, I am joined this evening by my special guest, Mr. Steve Messenger. Steve, how you doing, man?
Great, man. Fantastic to be here. Thanks for having me on.
You know what? Did you have a good New Year's?
Yeah, it's pretty low key. Anymore, it's like I don't get excited about going out and staying out to everything. So just had a quiet night with family, hung out, had a couple beverages, you know, and I think around 1 o'clock I was out.
You know what? I'm that way too. I've gotten to a point, man, when I was younger, I was all about the New Year's Eve. But as I've gotten older, I don't know if it's like my temperament's changed, my tolerance for bullshit has changed. That I'm like, I'd rather I went to dinner with some friends.
Yep.
And then back at the girlfriend's house by 9:30 and just watched some TV and hung out and watched the ball drop. And you know, that was that. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's I think the two, outside of just the safety of getting there and back, because that's a huge factor anymore. It's, to me, I don't, and this is gonna sound weird because I'm at comic cons all the time, but I don't like being in a crowd. And furthermore, I don't like waiting for things. So if I'm in a crowd waiting to get a drink and I get up there and it's overpriced, it's like, I've got this at home. You know, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I get you. So how was the other holiday? How was Christmas?
Oh, pretty solid, man. Christmas, my favorite holiday is Thanksgiving. To me, Christmas, this is just kind of like Thanksgiving part two. I like to cook, you know, I like to hang out with family, get to see a lot of folks I haven't seen in a while. And, you know, it just felt weird that, you know, I think it was last Christmas, we had a good amount of snow and this year was like 55, like gray and rainy. And so I don't know, had a good time with family, nothing too crazy. How about you?
I had a very low-key Christmas, which was good. Just me, brother, sister-in-law, mom and stepdad, very, very low-key, enjoyed it. I took a couple weeks off from the PVD cast just to kind of, you know, recharge the batteries a little bit. You know? Yeah. And so it was great. It was awesome, but I'm ready to get back to putting out some great podcasts. That's right. Let's talk about the fact that you are the man behind the comic Slaughter Dolls.
Yeah.
Can you give a brief description of that project?
Yeah. It's a story about these two lovely ladies, these two femme fatales that they were serial killers. They might still be serial killers. They feel like maybe they're losing their humanity. Maybe they need to clean up their lives. So they decide to go from killing people to professional thievery. So instead of killing people, they're stealing their shit. But yeah, they get their first contract to go steal something from an old contact that they have, and stuff goes sideways. So that's the gist of book one. Got a lot of positive reception off of it, and surprisingly, the number one thing that I'm getting feedback on is that people are loving the book, but they're like, so when are they going to go back to just being serial killers, because we want to see these girls kill people. I'm like, okay. I was trying to keep it tonally a little more comedic, but okay. You guys wanted to go dark. So maybe book two, we'll see. I already had a plan for where things were going to go, but things might get a little bit darker down the road.
You got to give the people what they want.
You know, and if the loudest voice is we want to see these girls butcher some people, then I guess that's my neighbor's got to be wondering what the hell I'm talking about. I don't know how thin these walls are. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's actually, it's my very first full completed book that I've done on my own. 100% colors, lettering, story, right? The whole nine yards is done by me. And it's actually the third book that I produced The first two, I would get to a certain phase and I'm like, this isn't it. You know, I like the world. I like the setting. But the first one was more of like a teen book, like an X-Men or an X-Force kind of thing. But again, with a few ladies. And I just partway through, I'm like, I learned so much by doing it. I'm like, I could do so much better. Like, this book sucks. Second book, I had in my mind, I have a lot of my fans like the darker stuff I do, the horror stuff, the monsters. So I was like, you know what? Maybe we'll embrace more of a horror story. By the end of it, I'm like, I joke around way too much to write this serious of material. So that book might get published at some point because it's pretty much done. But that's not what I wanted to be my first book that I wanted to like keep doing issues of. And so I sat down and I started drafting up like what if I'm going to spend hours slaving over this paper, drawing, inking, coloring, lettering, proofing, editing, selling, marketing, like I want to have characters that I'm excited to talk about. And these two girls, like, I love the sense of humor. I love the darkness that can happen. But that's more of my style, the story I want to tell than the last two books that I put together that are living on a shelf behind me somewhere.
Well, you wear lots of hats, as you just stated. You, the creator, the inker, the penciler, the writer, the marketing guru, everything. How do you keep up?
A lot of caffeine. it's more of a mentality of I feel like I'm playing from behind. I tried to be an artist right out of high school. I just went full time working at a factory that I had been at part time in high school, and I quit that job to try to be an artist back in, it's probably 2005 or six is when I quit that job. No idea what I was doing. Wasn't making any money. I got a couple things published, which I was stoked, you know, like, I don't even have a degree and I'm like doing this stuff, but I'm like donating plasma to like eat. And yeah, so I went back to work at that factory because I'm like, what else am I going to do? Like, I'm not making any money. 2008 was hitting. Like, that recession was terrible. You couldn't find a job anywhere. And I decided I'm just going to climb the ladder, man. Like, I'm not making money on art. So it's a hobby now. And I gave up drawing for like 8 years. And I had a turning point in life. I won't go into all those details, but like at a turning point where I'm like, I've got a skill here and a talent here that I have forsaken. And if I don't do something with it now, I never will. So started getting back into drawing around 2016. I started a podcast around then to like, you know, draw the characters. We had like a D&D campaign that we were doing online. Had a lot of fun with that, but I was using my artwork to get into comic cons to also pimp out the podcast. Once I got to the point where I'm like, you know what? I'm making more money at these shows, having fun drawing stuff than a job I've been at for 20 years. I made a hard left turn into doing this full time. And, you know, stepping into the scene where I've got guys that are, you know, 10 years younger than me that have been in the business for 10 years already, that they've worked for Marvel, they've worked for DC. And I'm like, I'm still learning proper perspective. Like, to me, it's like I got to make up for lost time. And it's I can't afford necessarily to pay someone to be my inker, to be my colorist right now. Getting steam with these Kickstarters, getting steam with more shows, it's like, well, the only person that's going to do it's me. So I got to put the time in now, and I got to make up for lost time. That's the long answer.
No, but that's an honest answer. I appreciate that because I think that your tale is, I guess, reminiscent of many other people that I've talked to that feel like, man, I haven't been doing this as much as I want to be. I'm a failure, or I'm not achieving my goals, and therefore I should second guess myself. I think that your tale that you just told us right there shows your resiliency.
Dude, it's about every show that I go to, there's at least one person, sometimes it's multiple in a day, there's at least one person that says what you just said. Like, I've been with the company for 10 years, 20 years, you know, and I'm making good money, but I always wanted to do whatever, you name it. Woodworking, I've heard. Art, of course, tons of people tell me that they want to get into art, comic books, that sort of thing. Had a guy tell me he wanted to get into stand-up comedy, and I asked him, like, what's holding you back? I got family. I need to make money. I'm like, that's important. That's important. Are you fulfilled? And the answer is always no, right? Like, they're obviously proud to be taking care of their families. And that's important. at the same time, and what I tell all of them is, like, there's something else that your kids need to learn because they're watching you. And when they see you come home and you're miserable and all you do is you come in, and I could see people start nodding when I'm saying this because it's like I have a window into their house that I'm peeping through, right? It's like you come home, you eat dinner, you sit down with a beer, you turn on the TV, and 2 hours later, you're out cold. Your kids are seeing that, and they're assuming that's what you're supposed to do. So if you're not happy, if you're not pursuing things that make you happy, guess what you're setting your kids up for? So what's holding you back from doing the thing that you really want to do? We have the best opportunity in America to take something as silly as you name all the things that there are people that are making goofier podcasts than I've ever been on myself, like a D&D podcast. There's people making tons of money playing D&D, making the figures, making the things that they love to do. So guess what? Like, do the thing that you want to do, because there's tons of ways to make money. And most importantly, kids need to see a positive way forward.
Well, let's go back and talk a little bit about the structure of Slaughter Dolls.
Yeah.
What was the inspiration for you starting this tale? Like, I know you mentioned you did a horror one, you did a couple of other versions. What clicked this time?
It was kind of a mix of things. I wanted to do something that had the potential to go dark, kind of slapstick even with some of the action and the gore. Somewhere between grindhouse, horror, and I guess Dumb and Dumber. That's my favorite movie of all time. And I just, so I was like, you know what? It's kind of what boiled down to. Some of my favorite stuff was, I really love the Dexter series that, you know, he's a serial killer trying not to get caught, you know, and all this stuff. I love Dumb and Dumber. The humor is so smart, but it's so dumb. But the other thing was, like, I like drawing pinup art. So it's like, let's just mash it all together. Because, again, if I'm going to be spending hours doing this, you know, I want to work on something that I want to really invest my time into. So I don't know. It was just kind of, I think, trial and error. Because I think at first I wanted to write that teen book and I wasn't feeling it. I wanted to do a horror book and I wasn't feeling it. But once I started working on this, like, I'm driving to my next show and I've got a 6-hour drive and I'm laughing my ass off just thinking up these scenarios for these girls to be in. And I'm like, if I'm laughing, hopefully someone else thinks it's funny. You know, otherwise maybe I've got problems.
Well, let's take a sidestep for a moment and turn down a different avenue here. Are you a fan of, like, those horror comedies?
Horror in particular, not really. Okay. But, like, some of the slapstick stuff that, like, of course, the Army of Darkness back in the day and that kind of stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Anymore, like, I haven't watched the movie, period, in probably a couple of years now. It's just not been on the radar.
Sometimes life gets in the way. There's been a ton of movies in 2023 that I wanted to see that I was looking at the other day for a possible upcoming episode, and I was like, holy cow, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that. I want to see that. It's the problem that I always love to talk about is that there's too much good shit now.
Dude, it's content overload out there.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I get people. My cousin's a fine example. He loves to give me shit about, oh, you haven't watched such and such. Well, dude, I'm doing a podcast. I'm working in a 9-to-5. I got a girlfriend that I'm trying, to balance those three things. I mean, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't watch the latest Star Wars on Disney Plus. I'll get to it eventually.
There's so much content. And I think I heard this recently. They said that the 90s was the last real decade. And that's because I think you didn't have the internet just spewing content out. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody was tuning into the same shows. So if someone said, bro, you haven't seen Predator? It's like, well, that's because, like, that's one of maybe 15 movies that came out that year that was worth seeing in the theater. So, like, yeah, if you missed it, what else were you doing?
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's like between video games and comics and books and podcasts and you name it, like, I don't know. If you were stuck on a desert island with your cell phone, you could keep yourself entertained probably for years.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as you kept that phone charged.
Yeah, yeah. A little solar panel or something. Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your artwork, because I hope that this is going to be taken as a compliment. I found that the artwork was very reminiscent of Gen 13. You know, J. Scott Campbell,
yeah,
that very voluptuous pinup girl style. Talk to me about why you decided that style would work for this book.
So, to be fair, I only started doing pinup stuff maybe a couple of years ago. Like,
okay,
I always found drawing girls a challenge. Number one, like with dudes, you can put them in armor, you can make them bulky, and it's like stylized. With girls, like if you screw up a curve, if you screw up a line, it's wrong, it's off. It just so I, number one, from a technical standpoint, I sucked at drawing girls, and then number two, there's a lot of social media criticism that comes around girls, and what I've learned doing this stuff at shows is that there's a huge demand for it. There's a huge demand for pinup stuff, not just from guys. There's a lot of gals and everyone else in between that is into this stuff. It just became this social faux pas on social media that it was easy to throw stones and make commentary. Because like you said, Jay Scott, it seems like every year, it's like once or twice a year, there's someone that's trying to cancel him because he drew Mary Jane. I don't know what to tell you. Like, beautiful girls exist. So it was one of those things where, I'll try to keep a long story short, I tend to ramble if you haven't picked up on that, is that I had someone that wanted me to draw the Little Mermaid Disney style with like tattoos and piercings, all tatted up. And it turned out good enough. It was serviceable. They liked it, whatever. And I had a buddy, Joshua Lopez. He's a fantastic artist. Great dude. He's like, bro, you should draw her in your style. I'm like, oh, I don't really have a style. You know, like I had influences. J. Scott, obviously. Turner, Michael Turner, with Fathom and all that. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to draw one. I drew the Little Mermaid in my style of pinup that was sort of a blend of these different influences. And went off famously. People were loving it. And you can't just have the Little Mermaid. Then you got to have Beauty and the Beast. You got to have all these other ones and try not to get sued by Disney. And so my wall, I had like an okay Harley and Poison Ivy that were like kind of okay. And then like all these punk rock pinup style, you know, princesses I was doing, those were selling left and right. So I was like, you know what? We're just going to lean into it. And you know, that's the great thing about doing Comic Cons online. People will say anything. They'll hit the like button, not say anything. But people that are giving you money, those are your customers. So I don't care what anyone says online. And thankfully, no one has had much to say negatively about me online at all. But when you're getting that feedback at the show, it's like, okay, this works. And this is the avenue I'll go. And, you know, if I'm fine with doing it, it doesn't rub me the wrong way. And people are buying it. Like, that's my customer.
You talked a little bit about using Kickstarter. So let me get your input on, or your opinion, I should say, on the process of Kickstarter. I found that there's two camps. People really like it. People really hate it. There's not a lot of middle ground. Where do you stand on that spectrum, so to speak?
I think I'm in the middle ground.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It's, I did not have a clue what I was getting into first time around. It is, you really have to put on your marketing and graphic designer hat to, get that thing going, because the way it's set up now, everything that you punch in there, you also have to have a picture, but the picture has to be certain dimensions, but it's going to be different dimensions than what you use for your banner. So you got to use all these different templates that you've got to put together. And by the way, sometimes, not trying to throw too much shade Kickstarter, but sometimes the Kickstarter site just crashes. So you'll be in there uploading all this stuff and then it just freezes. And that's where we call it a day and we go do something else before we throw our keyboard across the room. But the big thing is the amount of folks that you can get just through the natural marketplace that's on there. When I was going through the people that were backing me, there were several folks that I recognized their names right off the rip when I was going through and looking at all my backers. But there were so many folks that were doing digital downloads from overseas that even messaged me like, hey, man, love how this looks. I can't afford the $50, you know, customs fees that has to go through all this, but I'm buying all your digital stuff. So next time around, I'm going to have more digital stuff. Those guys alone, I mean, I probably had 30 people from overseas that just, that's what they do. They get on Kickstarter, they find digital content, and that's how they back it. I'm in both sides. Is it a pain in the ass? Yes. Is it rewarding? Also yes. So I don't know. Maybe one day when I can afford to pay someone to go do it for me, great. But until then, I'm going to have a couple more coming out this year in 2024.
All right, we'll talk about those in a minute, but I want all the indie creators out there that listen and know me and whatnot. There you go. You got to right from what Steve said. You need to hit it big so you can have somebody run your Kickstarters.
There it is. That's a good plan. That's a trick. That's a trick. Get rich quick, then do a Kickstarter.
Well, let's talk about some of those Kickstarters that are coming up assume for the second issue of Slaughter Dolls and maybe even a few other things you have in the pipeline, so to speak.
Yes. So I've got two that are coming out before Slaughter Dolls. I am doing, first and foremost, it was a stretch goal for the first campaign. It was a lofty stretch goal and we didn't quite get there. So, gave me more time to work on it, prepare it, make it its own special release on Kickstarter. It's going to be a pinup collection of everything that I've done up through 2023. So the stuff that, I think is still some of my top notch stuff from 2022 into 2023, it's going into a compilation. I'm going to have a few exclusive pinup covers that are going to be available, but the big one is going to be, I'm going to be doing blank sketch covers. And one of the things that you can get as a reward tier on there is, if you want a commission, I'll draw whatever pinup you want on there as part of the Kickstarter. So that way you can get a little something custom done and not necessarily have to buy one of my bigger commissions that I was advertising last time. So that'll be coming up first. The next one is going to be, again, I'm trying not to get sued by Disney. This is like my kind of where I'm at in life right now. I found out with parody law, you can actually get away with quite a bit. Let me ask you this. Are you a Star Wars guy?
Yes.
Did you like Book of Boba Fett?
It was mid. It was kind of, you know, I didn't hate it. Didn't love it. Right. It was, you know.
To me, it was mid at best.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of folks that talk to me at shows that were on the same page. Like, there was some cool stuff, but, like, it was all over the place. So I'm making my own version of what I thought Book of Boba Fett should have been. It's going to be called Steve Messenger's Dark Side, The Return of Cole Cobb. And there will be a certain bounty hunter that is escaping from a monster. And he's on his way to, instead of trying to take over a crime empire, he's out for revenge. He's out for blood. And maybe he'll come back to do the whole crime lord thing. But right now, he is out to get the guys that put him down in the belly of that beast.
Cool. All right.
So
that sounds like an amazing project.
Hopefully I don't. I actually talked to somebody. Their name will remain anonymous, that works with Disney and works with a lot of their, we'll say, more controversial stuff that might show up on the internet and at shows. And obviously he's not legal advice and I still have to be careful, but he said what I'm doing is technically seems like it's well within parody laws.
Okay, cool.
So we'll see. We'll find out if I get a cease and desist.
If you do, you should frame it and put it on your wall.
You're the third person to tell me this.
That's my dream. If I get a cease and desist, I'm like, I want one. Yeah. I want it so I can put it on the wall. All right, and put it back there with Deadpool and look at it every day.
You know? I love it. Well, we'll see how it goes. that will be coming out probably May or June would be my guess, the Kickstarter. And then Slaughter Dolls, just to kind of round it out, that's going to be late summer. That's going to be a swimsuit issue. That one I've got a lot of people looking forward to issue two already. So that will probably be August, September-ish. So.
Okay. I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Steve for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, comic book supplies, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, some cool retro toys in the front case. Trust me, they got you covered for your fandom. So stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. Their website is wgcomics.com, and they're pretty active on their Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. Can we talk a little bit about some of the cover work that you've done? Because you've done work with Merc Publishing, Comics Elite. Heck, let's talk about it. Even Lee Exifer, an altered ego, good friend of the show, Lee.
Yes.
So what's the game plan for you when you do a cover as opposed to the interiors of your book? So when somebody says, hey, Steve, we want you to do this cover, how do you go about planning it out? How do you go about just doing and designing that cover?
Well, let me tell you, I feel like I'm one of the luckiest guys on earth when it comes to this, because 12 of the covers I've done, I already had done them. That was Sean Dodochko with Comics Elite and Merc. He found me. It was Ernie and Zach. They found me at Lexington and then Indiana Comic Con. They've been buying some of my prints, selling them to some of their guys online. Ernie had told Sean about me, and then Sean came and talked to me at Indiana, and he saw I had all the punk rock princesses, and he's like, love them. Would love to do a set of them. We're going to have our guy recolor them because they want to match sort of their aesthetic of what they do. Mm-hmm. He's like, how about we get a handshake deal on this? Oh yeah. So that was, I am eternally grateful. That was my very first comic book deal. I didn't have to do a damn thing other than the work I'd already done. And that just got the fire lit under my ass. I'm like, you know what? There's more opportunity out there. These things are going to get published at some point. So I started getting more hits. I've worked with like JoJo's Collectibles, did a couple Game of Thrones inspired covers for him for Power Hour. Did I've got actually one coming out with another. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it yet, but I got it. At any rate, so I got a lot more coming out. The big thing is when someone talks to me, I just take whatever that character is or that format is, and I just start doing real rough sketches, and I kind of try to get a feel for what I think that cover, what that character will look like the best on that cover. And I'll send out a few thumbnails, let them pick, and then commit to it. I'm a little more meticulous with those kind of covers simply because I want them to be as clean as possible. You know, like, I don't know. I'm still like, I don't know if gun shy is the right word, but I want to make sure that the stuff that's going out, no one's going to be like, well, you know, the shoulders are wrong or whatever. So do a pencil sketch. I'll use a light board. I was actually doing this earlier today to ink it on a fresh sheet of paper on top. And then once it's all approved and all that, then I sit down and do all the coloring on my iPad. I use Procreate. So it's a little more tedious sometimes because there's more people that have input on the process. But my experience has been the shops that I'm working with that want exclusives done or publishers or whatnot, they're usually like gung-ho about it. They're excited. They have great feedback. They're easy to work with.
So how was it working with Lee? In fact, also too, how did you and Lee hook up? Because I don't even know if I know that story.
Yeah, so it was kind of funny. Like when Lee, I knew that Lee was working on a Kickstarter. I was talking to him at a show about it, that it was coming up. And I had a piece of advice from another artist. He said, when you're starting, dude, he's like, just make connections and, you know, see what you can do to expand your portfolio. And like, this could be dangerous, but he's like, Don't always give yourself away for free, but if it's the right person, it's the right project, dude, if you can do it for free, do it for free. Get as many credits as you can, so that way when you're talking to other publishers, you can show them the books. And when people are walking by your booth at a show, they can see your books. Because what would you rather have? No money and no book on the table, or a book on the table? Makes sense to me. So resume builder and that sort of thing, but Lee's a great dude, and I've always been impressed with how professional they are. So it's just one of those things that's already clicking in my mind, and he had reached out to me about doing the sketch cards. And he's like, hey, how much would you charge for that? I'm like, dude, I'll do sketch cards. They're tiny. No problem. I was like, but while we're at it, how about a cover? And I know that's a big ask too, though, because it's like anytime, like for me, I had people reaching out to me about possibly doing a cover for free. And I'm like, dude, I don't have the money to do another run of 100 books. Like, once this Kickstarter gets the money, you know, wrung out of the rag dry, it's like, I'm going to be in the hole buying more books, which I can sell. But I know it's also an ask to be like, hey, do you want to take a chance on my artwork and you publishing it? And Lee didn't bat an eye. He's like, hell yeah, dude, let's do it. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to do Boss Babe, get her on a cover, do whatever you want. Well, that's easy. So yeah, it was, I remember seeing, I forget what the game is, but there's some girl that she's got like the big arcade guns. I don't know if it's League of Legends or what it is.
You got me. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I had just remembered seeing like there was this cool character and she's got these big arcade guns and I'm like, that would be cool. Put her in front of like an old school arcade cabinet. I have no idea if that fits with this storyline at all, 'cause I hadn't seen the book yet. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I'm thankful for Lee for, number one, even thinking of me to be on the project, but then number two, giving me freedom to run on it.
Let's kind of switch gears a little bit here. I noticed from doing some research that when you do commissions, you do sketches, you like to do a lot of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, so I'm assuming you're a big fan.
It's the Turtles. I have been a fan since I was a child, and they have been good to me, and it's one of those things I'm finding, like, again, it's like just the feedback you get at a show, the amount of people are like, I like that you make them look gritty. I like that you make them look tough. That's the kind of turtle I want. I don't want the cartoony stuff. Everybody does the cartoony stuff. And I'm like, well, I'll be happy to take the money. So it all works out. It all works out.
Have you ever gotten a chance at a con to meet Eastman or Laird?
I have not.
Do you have any other favorite superheroes or characters? They don't have to be superheroes.
I think just staying in the superhero world, when I was growing up, Batman was hands down my favorite. I was a kid that had like every version of Batman, you know, every version of the armors and stuff that was purely made just to be a toy. Like, I ate it all up, man. It's funny, though, because once I got into high school, I discovered Deadpool. And I was just looking at the poster you had behind you. Dude, I freaking love Deadpool. I love the humor. I love the fourth wall breaking stuff. I know that Liefeld gets a lot of criticism for, you know, how he draws and the style. Dude, I loved all the extra pouches and the crazy guns and everything. I was all about it. And I'd be sitting at school drawing this dude, you know, Deadpool. Kids would be like, why are you drawing Spider-Man with guns and swords? It's not Spider-Man. So I guess to kind of round it out, like, I am hoping, I'm putting a lot of faith in Mr. Ryan Reynolds to make Deadpool 3 the movie that it needs to be. I think Disney has a lot riding on it.
I have faith. I think he will do a very good job. The first two were awesome.
Oh yeah.
Obviously I was a fan. I was a fan from way back when, you know, before he, I joke that I liked Deadpool before everybody else found out about it, you know, kind of like in that, when he had that four issue shot, like in the late 90s with Lee Weeks as the artist on there, that's where I got hooked. And again, much like you, I thought it was, you know, the comedy and the over the top violence and whatnot was fantastic. And I was hooked as well. With it. So that definitely, any other comic book characters that you dig?
You know, off the top of my head, I'm kind of drawing a blank. But the only other character that I'm hoping they do justice here soon, as far as like the Marvel Disney world, is Gambit. I don't know how I feel about a Channing Tatum Gambit. All I care about is that they do him justice.
Okay.
I feel like since the 90s X-Men cartoon, he has not had his proper light on him, and I think that needs to happen.
All right. How about some comic book creators? Who are some of yours that are your favorites?
I will say earliest influence as far as someone that really got me to figure out my style early on in life was Mark Silvestri and Bat. Those two working on The Darkness. Everybody was going the Todd McFarlane Spawn route. I wasn't necessarily allowed to have those comic books, but somehow I got The Darkness in. And okay. Arguably a much worse comic book as far as content for a kid. But those two in particular early on, this amount of detail they were cramming into every panel, and the page layouts, and again, the humor was very akin to like a Deadpool kind of humor with the little darklings. I don't know if you got into the darkness at all, but
I did not. I have a few issues of Spawn, but that was about it. It wasn't like a, you know, well, forget those guys. None of that stuff at all. I didn't care. I just wanted great comics. So Spawn is pretty much my breadth of what I know when it comes to Spawn. But I'm familiar with the darkness. I'm familiar with it, but I just never read it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if they still have it in circulation at all, but they had a collection of, I think it was like the first 10 issues. That was where Mark was doing the pencils and Bat was doing the inks. Amazing, amazing run. The only one that I want to get a shout out right now, not that he needs my shout out, is Jim Lee. Like, I did a show, it was March of 2020 was the last convention I did. It was literally the weekend they were talking about shutting down the country. And we weren't sure if we were going to finish the weekend out. That was the last show where I had made up my mind that this is what I want to do full time. And I was pretending, I was like, you know what? The world doesn't explode. I'm going to pretend I've got 1 year before shows start to open again. I'm going to do everything I can to be ready for when the world opens. And thank God that Jim Lee was doing live streams where he was showing a process from taking a blank sheet of paper to a completed sketch in about an hour. And my mind was just blown, man. It would take me, no joke, to do what Jim was doing with his ink. It would take me probably 10 to 12 hours to do. And again, not near the quality. And just watching his process, how he lays down inks with a brush and spraying ink with like a toothbrush and all this stuff. I'm like, I already crosshatch similar to how he crosshatches. If I just start using these different tools that I've avoided using, step out of my comfort zone, and sure as shit, over time, it's like I can pump out a serviceable picture in about an hour now. I'm like going lightning speed, but it, you know, building that confidence, I don't think I would be where I am as fast as I have been if it weren't for Jim, hands down. And I had the pleasure of meeting that dude at Denver this past year. I got the picture pinned on my Instagram. I got the pleasure to meet him. He was actually booth right across from me, and I was trying not to fanboy the whole weekend. But one of his helpers waved over to me. He's like, "Steve, you want to come get a picture with Jim?" I'm like, I'm not a big picture guy. Okay. Yeah. And I gushed pretty much the way I just gushed right there. That's what I did in front of Jim. And he was a total sweetheart. I'm sure he gets it all the time. And I'm like, I'm going to go over to my booth now. Thanks, Jim. Okay. Bye. So, totally awesome, dude.
Hey, well, speaking of conventions, you know, again, going through, taking a look at your social media and whatnot, you've been to many, many conventions in 2023. You have any memorable ones?
There's a yes. It's kind of like a blurry soup right now, but like some of the coolest ones was one of the very first comic cons I did full time was Indiana Pop Con. I haven't been back in years now, but that was one of the first ones I had coming out the gate out of COVID. And I had drawn, I knew that the armor was going to be there from the Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. What's her name? Emily Swallows. Mm-hmm. And I did a head sketch of the armor. Someone had bought that sketch and got her to autograph it. And he brought it back. He's like, "Dude, check it out, man. I got it autographed." I'm like, "Man, that's awesome." You know, he's like, "Yeah, she said she might stop over and say hi and get a pic for Instagram." I'm like, "That's not going to happen." Like, I can't imagine a celebrity of any caliber walking across the show floor, right? You know, like, I just didn't see it happening. And it was a few hours later, I'm sitting there minding my own business, talking to a customer or whatever, and I look over, and there's Emily Swallow with a team of security, and I'm like, holy shit. Total sweetheart. Through the grapevine, I've learned that she loves doing stuff like that, going on the show floor, meeting people, getting pictures with people, even going in costume and just, you know, like, full armor get up and going out there and being part of the experience. And it was such a lift to me at the time because I had just quit a job of 20 years to do this full time. The fact that like that validated mm-hmm. the decision. Mm-hmm. So I guess without regaling you with too many other lengthy stories, that was one that really stuck out to me, that there's so many awesome, genuine people in this business. And if you're just genuine back, and if you try to do the right thing, it's going to meet you in the middle.
I think I just saw, and I can't remember where, that she did that at a convention just recently, went out in the full armor and that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, she went over to Juan Carlos Esposito and like was talking to him, and he thought it was like a fan, and then she took the helmet off, and I think that was at GalaxyCon, actually. I think here a few weeks ago.
It probably was. I vaguely remember hearing someone saying that she might be doing it at that show. But when I get stuck behind my booth, like, I don't really get to see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, you just kind of hear the rumors going around, but I had heard that she was out and about, and I did see a pretty convincing armor costume come through at one point.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, Steve, let's start wrapping things up here. Let's talk about maybe what your goals are for 2024 before we get into social media, website, appearances, all that jazz. So what's one or two of your goals for this year?
Yeah, those three Kickstarters that we talked about, those are the three big ones. The other big thing is trying to get some new prints out. I've been adding on to my horror prints and my Ninja Turtle prints. I need to update some other stuff. People are still buying them. I just, after looking at them for a few years, I want to update my inventory. So I'm putting a lot on my own plate. But if you guys follow me on the different social medias and whatnot, you're going to see where the Kickstarters come up. Everything is just at Steve Messenger Art for Instagram. I'm on Instagram and Facebook, and it's both Steve Messenger Art.
Are you got anything scheduled so far for conventions?
Yeah, I'm going to be all over the Midwest. I'm branching out down to even Texas this year. I did Denver last year. I've got a full schedule. I was trying to keep it around 25 to 30 shows for this year, and I'm already over 30. So okay. I'll be posting those up on the socials on there, but pretty much all your Galaxy Cons, a lot of your fan expos. There's even a few tattoo shows that I'm doing, but if you check me out on Insta and all that, I'll be posting on those.
Well, Steve, thanks for sitting down and chatting with me, man.
Oh yeah, dude. Absolute pleasure, and I hope we get to do this again sometime, man.
Absolutely. You got it, man. We'll touch base a little bit later on this year when you got all those Kickstarters happening, or a couple of them done and a couple starting or whatnot. You got it.
Hell yeah, dude. Thanks again.
All right. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Steve Messenger, talking about his project Slaughter Dolls and all the other projects that he has coming down the pike in the next few months. I really enjoyed having Steve on, and definitely going to have him come back on maybe mid-year to hear about all of his cool projects and whatnot. So definitely check out his stuff, Steve Messenger Art, on all those social medias that he talked about. Check it out. And thanks again, Steve, for taking some time out of your busy schedule to talk to me. I really, truly do appreciate it. All right, and now it's time for me to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you have a question or comment or whatever about this episode or any episode for that matter. You can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at PVDMVP. You can also drop me a line over on the Facebook page, the Instagram page, or even on Threads. Just look for at PVDcast. And if you want to be old school, you can email me if you like, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know where they can find this podcast. Well, let me fill you in on that. Obviously, pvdcast.com is the online home of yours truly and the best place to get every single episode. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting outlets. All you got to do is go to your favorite podcasting outlet or app, go to the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it. I don't know why. It's just the way it is. Anyways, and you should be able to find it. And if you're listening through one of those outlets or apps, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to rate and review, because rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And of course, while you're doing that, you should just go ahead and subscribe so you never miss an episode. But there's two other avenues where you can hear this podcast. Every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I do a little live broadcast through the Facebook page. Once again, that's at PVDcast, where you can hear the episode. So all you do is go to the page. It'll be right there. It'll start playing, and you can enjoy the episode there. Or if you're one of those people that enjoy internet radio, I would like to let you know that the PVDcast is available on CROC Radio, Croc Radio out of British Columbia. I'm happy to be part of the family, the CROC family. It got a lot of great shows happening on that station, and I'm proud to be a part of it. And every Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is when the PVDcast plays on CROC Radio. So there you go. I count there's four ways that you can hear this great podcast. All right, well, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you very much for checking out the episode, and I shall chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC. Copyright 2024.